You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
For this month's edition of The Leonard Lopate Show Book Club, we have been reading Everything You Know by Zoe Heller. It was her first novel, published in 1999, and it's recently been reissued in paperback by Picador, a dark comedy about Willie Mueller, a curmudgeon who'd been accused of murdering his wife and who was estranged from his daughters. When one daughter commits suicide, he receives her journals in the mail, and they push him to think about turning his life around. I'm very glad to welcome Zoe Heller back to our show. Hello.
Hello, Leonard.
And we hope that our listeners who have also been reading the book will join in the conversation. If you have any questions for Zoe Heller, you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on our on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. You're known for writing difficult characters, and you've said that you don't write books for people to be friends with the character. What makes characters who are not 100% likable interesting to you as a writer?
Well, in this particular instance, when the book came out, which seems a long time ago now, I spent a lot of time vociferously denying that it was in any way a portrait of my father. And I made those denials in good faith. It isn't a portrait of my father. But having had to reread it for today, it's clear to me now that in some ways I was, it was a way of trying to work out my feelings about my father, and specifically about the problem I had as a young woman of identifying myself as very clearly as a feminist and feeling very passionate about kinds of gender inequalities, and at the same time finding men who I identified as reprehensible also enormously attractive and charming. So the book is, in a way, an attempt to reconcile those two contradictory responses.
But a number of authors have talked about how much more fun it is to write about somebody who is far from perfect. You've just gone a little further than most.
Yeah, I mean,
you haven't made him a serial killer.
It's funny because I've just finished writing an essay about the business of likable characters for the New York Times. I've slightly revised my initial position. Look, of course, you know, literature should not be treated as a hunting ground for moral exemplars or people you want to be friends with or people you'd like to invite to your next Seder. If you approach literature in that way, you're not going to get a lot from it. On the other hand, it seems to me reasonable that occasionally a reader will come across a character in a book who they find so difficult and so loathsome that it handicaps their appreciation of the novel. And it's particularly a problem if the author clearly has a fondness for the character that you as a reader find you can't share.
On the other hand, we read Notes from the Underground.
Right.
Dostoevsky's character is dislikable, and yet I think we often just see certain things of him in ourselves, and I think most readers will see a little bit of themselves one way or another in Willie Mueller.
Oh, well, I'm delighted if you think that. I remember the book got very I was struck reading it now.
Well, we all
several
have negative
years
thoughts,
later.
And if
it's
we're
strong
witty,
meat.
We think witty negative thoughts.
Right. It's strong meat. It elicits powerful reactions from people. Yes, I would like it to be the case that people find him charming and amusing as well as foul.
We invite our listeners to join in the conversation. Liz left a comment. She didn't add a question to it, but she said this was her favorite novel the year it was published. Quote, wonderful characters and wit and surprisingly moving.
Well, Liz is obviously a woman of impeccable taste. What can I say?
but readers might wonder whether a story about a cynical, very negative man who's made a mess of his life would be funny. It is also funny. And I'm assuming that was your intention.
Very much so, yes. In a way, I was struck reading it this weekend that it's a young person's book in the sense that it's quite a show-off book. I remember when I wrote the next book, which was Notes on a Scandal, coming out from my office and saying to my then husband, I'm a bit worried because there's not a joke on every page. I think it was my training as a columnist that I thought you would lose a reader's interest if you didn't kind of do a zinger every other sentence. And so this book tries possibly too hard to be funny.
It's interesting that you talked about Notes from a Scandal because that was made into a film.
Yeah.
People will remember it with Judi Dench and Cate Blanchett. And Willie is attempting to write a screenplay for a movie about his life based on a book he wrote about his wife's death called To Have and To Hold. But he's having problems with it.
Right. Yes, that part was... I grew up in a family of screenwriters. My brother is a screenwriter and my father was a screenwriter and I married a screenwriter.
Father wrote The Dirty Dozen or was one of the writers of The Dirty Dozen? No?
The writer, yeah, wrote The Dirty Dozen.
And whatever happened to Baby Jane?
Exactly, yes.
Impressive.
Yeah, yeah. I grew up watching people have a hard time writing scripts. So the book contains some satirical stuff about the nature of Hollywood and the nature of writing in Hollywood.
Willie has a lot of negative thoughts. Can you give us a little sense of who he is? Does his attitude come from self-loathing or a sense of superiority?
I think both. It never seems to me those things are entirely contradictory. Well, you know, what I said earlier about realizing as a young woman that there were all sorts of things I officially disapproved of but also found deeply alluring in a certain model of masculinity. I think in a way this book was my fairy tale attempt to reconcile those things, and I redeem my piggish male. I try to have all the fun of his piggishness and the attractiveness of his piggishness, but show that in the end he can repent of his sins and be a good guy. He's negative what I hope is a funny way. He has a sort of reflexive cynicism about things, and it's sort of the humor I grew up with. My father had a very dark sense of humor, and it's, I think also in England, the idea of teasing, of being mean, is much more part of the common culture. And it took me a long time to acculturate in when I was in America, because people were always accusing me of being unpleasant when really I was just, you know, I was trying to bond. But it seemed like aggression to them.
Well, in Willie's case, he is deeply unhappy on top of it all. I hope you weren't when you came here. When we meet him at the start of the book, he's just had a heart attack, and you get the feeling that he wishes that he had died.
Yeah, I think actually, looking at it now, I'm really struck by how much it's a portrait of not just Willie's, but his daughter's loneliness. Mm-hmm. I mean, to that extent, you know, it is a funny book, but I also found it really painful this time round looking at it. I thought, my goodness, this is a lot of unhappiness on the page.
And actually, did it come from me?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the thing is that actually when I first got to New York, I was pretty lonely. I'd come to New York with the idea that, this is my town. I went to college here. I know this place. But in fact, I didn't know anybody or anything. So I was quite lonely, and I stayed through sheer bloody-mindedness because I felt I had to make it work. So I think that does actually trickle through into the book. But yes, he's a miserable guy.
He's made a lot of mistakes in his life. He wasn't a good husband. His wife, Una, died when she fell during a drunken argument with him and hit her head on the refrigerator handle. And he was accused of murdering her.
Yes.
And there are people who believe, even though he eventually was acquitted after a couple of trials, that he did murder her.
Right. So he's carrying a heavy burden of... I mean, he's got a seriously bad rep. I was interested in the desirability of bad men. I think that's part of it. I mean, I it is the book of a different person. I read it and I think, oh, this isn't quite me anymore. And one of the things I think is that I am more in love with that particular mode of masculinity than I am now.
I have a friend whose daughter is really smart, but she never really found any of the smart boys in high school attractive, always the bad boys. I've always wondered about that, why the smart girls like the bad boys instead of the people they could have a real conversation with.
Well, the thing about Willie is you can definitely have a real conversation.
Oh, no, Willie, yes.
I see the point you're making. In the case of Willie, I think the point is he is smart, and the real thing is he makes you laugh. And also the great appeal of him for me and for, to some extent, my father was that he was always defying whatever the current orthodoxy was. And there's something at once a bit tiresome about somebody. He's always playing devil's advocate and winding people up in that way, but also very appealing.
So his wife has died. What happens to his daughters after that?
Well, the daughter whose diaries appear in the novel, she's sent off to a boarding school and lives with various aunts and so on. But for both daughters, I think their childhood is one of sort of abandonment, and their experience is one of abandonment. And she knocks about and leaves school, doesn't do her A-levels, doesn't graduate high school, lives in a squat with her sister, has an affair with a married man, has a child eventually, and then kills herself. And then in an interesting gesture, before she kills herself, decides to send her diaries that span the period from early childhood to now, to her father.
Is that her way of offering an explanation for her suicide? Did she intend it to be read as an extended suicide note? Or
I think it's maybe just a sort of effort to be known by him.
And at first, Willie doesn't want to read them, but then he decides to.
Yeah.
And he discovers somebody he didn't really know.
Right. There's a sort of the title of the book comes from an incident where Willie and his then wife are in a hotel in Atlantic City, and it's a Yiddish syntax. It's someone arguing with somebody else about where the elevators are, and the woman says, "Everything you know," as in, you think you know everything, don't you? And in a sense, Willie thinks he knows everything and discovers many things that he doesn't.
Well, Sadie and her sister had, as you said, well, both became unwed mothers, lived in council flats, which is the British equivalent of housing projects. And does the fact that they fell out of the upper middle class bother Willie? These are his daughters.
Yes, I think so. But the interesting thing about Willie, and this is also partly what the book is about being, Willie is himself, doesn't have a very stable role in the English class system. He is a Jewish-German refugee, as was my father. I think he says in the book that he was never quite sure whether people disliked him as a little boy because he was German or because he was Jewish or both. And his marriage to these girls' mother was for him a kind of grasping at the brass ring of kind of belonging and class security. And the failure of that marriage was for him a sort of the failure of the attempt to belong.
But in your father's case, he went to Los Angeles and wrote some hit movies. And Los Angeles, a German Jew, just feels like he's part of a long tradition, doesn't he?
Yeah, no, that's true. My father had a very complicated relationship to England. It's the place that saved him, from Nazi Germany. And he always kept a base there, but He resented it in all sorts of ways.
My guest is Zoe Heller. Her first novel, Everything You Know, has just been reissued by Picador, and it is the subject of this month's Leonard LoPage Show book club. You're invited to join the conversation by writing us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard LoPage. When did you move to the United States? Well, you'd lived here part of the time when you were a child, weren't you?
Right. I spent a little bit of time in Los Angeles when I was a wee baby. And then I went to did a year at Columbia after doing an undergraduate degree in England. And then I came back when I was about 27. Whatever.
Writing for a British newspaper
early
at the
2000.
Time?
Yes. I came with the idea that I wanted to write a novel and I was going to take some time off and I was tired of London.
You've been writing a column about dating and sex and relationships?
No, I started doing that and it wasn't really about dating and sex and relationships. I had to fill in for another person who was off that summer. So they asked me to spend a summer writing columns and it ended up being a gig that lasted for many years. I wrote, among other, I did write quite personally about my life, which was something I later somewhat regretted.
Would you have felt as free to write about that subject if you had remained in England?
The great and the bad thing was that it gave me this sense of, I felt liberated because I wasn't actually writing for the audience that I was living among. What would happen was I would go back to England and be, you know, in the bank, and a bank teller would say, "Yeah, you're Zoe Heller, aren't you? How's your boyfriend then?" And I'd be mortified, you know. I'd suddenly realize, actually, I am writing this stuff to people. It's not just going into a diary, you know. So it was an interesting experiment, but I probably did it for too long, and it was quite difficult to be taken seriously doing anything else subsequently.
But it's also easier to write about those kinds of things when you put it into a work of fiction.
Yes.
You could be quite personal, and you could talk about all of those subjects and be quite revealing, but of course it's not you, it's your character.
Yes. No, and I think in other ways, yes, a lot of that's true, but I think, again, you know, reading this book now, I read it slightly with my hands over my eyes a lot of the time, because I found it quite exposing. I was quite shocked by how indirectly honest it was.
Willie's not very pleasant to his friends or his girlfriend. Does he realize that he doesn't like these people?
Yeah, I think he absolutely does. I mean, he talks at some length about how he doesn't like them. I think he, you know, what you're hearing from Willie is the way that some of us, you know, I think everyone talks quite unpleasantly and acerbically about people they know. Willie maybe does it more than most.
He does make some attempts to reconcile with his remaining daughter as he's trying to change his life. But it's kind of heartbreaking. As he describes it to a friend, she took his money and then called him a murderer.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I feel as a reader of that a sort of mixed thing, you know, sadness for him, but understanding for why she might be that way. He is, you know, this book is partly an examination of how family dysfunction reproduces itself and passes on from one generation to another. So he has produced two children who were extremely damaged, and he reaps the consequences.
Was it your intention from the start to write about people who can change? Because then your novel, The Believer, from 2009, is also about how people can change.
You know, in some ways, now I look at this book and find the sort of late in the day, almost redemption, a little bit implausible. I don't think I'm excessively optimistic about people's capacity for change. I do have, in the case of The Believers, which is a lot about people's sort of passionate political and religious convictions, I have a great deal of admiration for people who can change their minds. I think for most of us, you know, our belief systems become sort of cozy old sweaters. that it's tiresome and frightening to try and change. So people who really have who have the kind of energy, the intellectual energy and honesty to keep developing, I have a great deal of time for.
You mentioned that the autobiographical column for the newspaper could be a bit embarrassing when you were back to England. Well, you've written recently about the problem of reviewing books and what happens when you write an honest review that is negative, and then you have to come face-to-face with the person who you panned at some writer's conference or some social event.
Yeah. Well, the great thing, Leonard, is I don't get out that much. I'm raising two kids, so there aren't that many occasions on which I'm clinking glasses with the literati. But by and large, you know, if that does happen, my feeling is, well, you know, you take your knocks, don't complain too much about it, and that I'm such a sort of pedant in a way. I couldn't bear to not write what I thought. So I'm prepared to put up with the consequences.
Well, there's the other side of that. In England, there are some people who kind of make a reputation for being literary hitmen. They write nasty reviews as a matter of course. And I remember talking to the former book editor at the Telegraph who had written a memoir, and they savaged him. And he said, well, I created this monster. I guess I have to live with it.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the only thing, the thing that maybe upsets me most is when I'm accused of writing a hatchet job, which to me implies a sort of willful, gratuitous aggression and an ad hominem or ad feminem animus. You know, I actually, you know, book reviews don't pay. They're not... I'm not interested in becoming famous for being, you know, a nasty person. I'm really trying to write what I think is the truth. And it doesn't have much to do with, you know, what I happen to think of the individual or any of that stuff.
Well, do the friends of the author, for example, after you wrote a rather hard review of Salman Rushdie's Joseph Anton for the New York Review of Books, do his friends come up to you and say, Zoe, you shouldn't have done that?
Word comes back to you through the grapevine that so-and-so, you know, deeply disapproved and thought you were too hard on so-and-so. Generally, to your face, most people say, oh, I'm so glad you said that. No, I haven't had any glass of wine thrown in my face over that one. Not yet.
You did say that you read this book, your first novel, Everything You Know, with your hands over your eyes at times. Were you reading it as the author of a book many years later, or to some degree as a reviewer thinking, how would I review this book now?
Now, that would have been too painful a business. I didn't do the latter. It was more the former. So, you know, there are moments where you say, oh, not bad. And a lot of moments where you say, oh, how did they let me? Oh, why didn't someone stop me? Oh, and you very much want to put on a green eye shade and take up a pen and edit yourself. But I do think there are very few writers who sit glowing over their deathless prose when they reread their own work.
Actually, it's a pretty good book, I have to tell you, Zoe.
Leonard, that's so sweet of you. Thank you.
And thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you.
We've been talking about Zoe Heller's first book, that preceded What Was She Thinking? Notes on a Scandal, which was made into a film starring Cate Blanchett and Judi Dench, also The Believers. This one, Everything You Know, has just been reissued by Picador, and Michiko Kakutani, who has been known as a rather hard reviewer at times, said it was sparkling, a wall-like cast of misfits, hustlers, and losers, all delineated with Swiftian malice and glee. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you very much for having me.